There's a reason you aren't satisfied with the ordinary. You were made for adventure. A life with God doesn't have to be boring. It can be a pulse-pumping, heart-pounding life of purpose. And we can guide you there. The adventure awaiting you is bigger and more life-giving than you could ever imagine. Join us every weekend for 45 minutes of challenge, hope, and encouragement to guide you on your spiritual adventure.
And welcome to Crossroads. I'm so glad that you're here with us today. Whether it's your first time or your 1,000th time, I'm excited that you're joining us for week 3 of Who Was Jesus Really? My name is Hannah, and I produce experiences here at Crossroads. Normally, I'm with my friend Kyle, but he's not here today because he's going to be talking to us about how Jesus rewrote the rules. Let's catch up with him right now.
In this series, we're asking the question, who was Jesus really? And we're asking it because it's kind of hard to tell. You know, 2,000 years of history has so thoroughly blurred the answer that right now in our country, you might see what some people are saying and reasonably conclude that Jesus was actually a gun rights advocating crusader for political liberty and limited government. Or you might see what other people are saying and reasonably conclude that Jesus was actually all about open borders and democratic socialist ideals like the equal sharing of resources. Well, which one is it? Who was Jesus really? And to find the answer, we're gonna go all the way back, all the way to the source material, the ancient scriptures, to find the answers that are buried right beneath the surface. In week 1 of this series, Chuck talked about how Jesus followed all the rules. And in week 2, Brian talked about how Jesus broke all the rules. If that sounds like the contradiction thing I just talked about, you should watch those 2 weeks. This week is all about how Jesus rewrote the rules. So let me ask you a question. Who can rewrite the rules for humanity? Well, the answer is only one person, the King. The first concept that we're gonna start with today is something that's very clear in scripture. You don't have to go searching for it. It's that Jesus is the King. Now you find this first in Isaiah chapter 9, verse 7. It says, "Of the increase of his government and of peace, there will be no end. On the throne of David and over his kingdom," that's Jesus's kingdom, "to establish it and uphold it with justice and with righteousness from this time forth and forevermore." Jesus also talked about his kingdom all the time. In John 18, as an example, Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world." All the time, Jesus talked about his kingdom. And again, at the very end of the Bible, we see a picture of the King coming. Revelation 19, 16 describes this picture of Jesus. It says, "On his robe and on his thigh, he has a name written, King of Kings and Lord of Lords." Okay, so great, Jesus is King. But here's the more personal question. Who is allowed to come close to Jesus the King? Who's allowed in his inner circle? Who has a seat at his table? And who is destined to be left alone on the outside in the cold? Am I? Am I in the inner circle? Or am I an outsider? And today we're talking about this because I find that most people, even longtime Christians, feel like an outsider or an imposter when it comes to God. Maybe that's how you feel. You see people who post spiritually upbeat things on Facebook or Instagram and think, "Man, whatever happy meal that person's eating, I've never been invited to that table." You listen to pastors like me talk about God and think, "I'll never understand God the way that that guy or that girl seems to. They're just beyond me. I'm an outsider." Or have you ever gone to church, seen people raising their hands during the music and just looking like they're really into it? Just think, "That's not me. I've never felt that way, and I never will. I'm an outsider. I'm not an insider." If so, you're not alone. Truth is, every single one of us, me included, feel that way at one point or another. When it comes to God and the circle of insiders who are able to be close to Him, we feel like we're on the outside looking in. Maybe God's okay with us walking around the outer grounds, but if we ever actually tried to go up to the door and to go inside and get close to Him, he'd spot us immediately as the imposter that we are and kick us out of the inner circle, toss us right back out in the cold. Now, if you feel that way, or you ever have, It's because of your current answer to this one critical question. Who can come close to the King? Can I? And to help you find the answer, I'm going to take a big risk teaching-wise, and I'm actually going to walk you to a story in the Bible I know you've never heard of. And if you ever have heard of it, you probably forgot it. I know it. Now, it's a story that I found back in December as I was digging through the Christmas story. It was one of those times where I found a clue about who Jesus really was hiding right in plain sight. Because of Matthew chapter 1. Let me pray for you before we go any further, by the way, because we're going to need God's help to see this, I think. But God, I just thank you for everybody watching. All of us who feel like outsiders, God, I pray that you today you would invite us to your inner circle. That we'd have the bravery to walk up to your door, to step inside, and to get close to you. Amen.
Have you ever felt rejected, like an outsider, like you're just not good enough? If you've ever felt like that, today is for you. You're going to hear a song throughout the rest of this episode that was written for our Christmas broadcast. That's where I heard it for the very first time. And as soon as the lyrics started, I immediately had this sensation, this realization come over me that I had been experiencing this coldness, this distance between me and God. And as the song went on, God used it to warm me up and invite me back in close to Him. It speaks of the good news that Jesus rewrote the rules on who can come inside and who's left out in the cold. And the good news is today He is inviting you to come in from the cold.
Memories are falling with the snow. Christmas should be magic, but it's taking me back. If I'm being honest, I don't know how to make it make sense, how to keep from crying. I didn't know where else to go. Can I just come in from the cold? Just take off my coat, get warm by the fire, and rest my weary bones. Do you have a room at your table? It's hard for me to ask. I know we haven't spoken, but you're all that I have left. Can I come in from the cold? Can I come in from the cold?
Now, we're going to start with the very first words in the first book of the New Testament, which is the section of the Bible that directly details the life of Jesus and His first followers. Now, it's important to note, these are the first written words from God in 400 years. So you'd think, with 400 years to plan, God would have cooked up something awesome, you know, like a real headline grabber, a cool story, something that's just like totally retweetable, like, aha! Yes, this at God. Ooh, so true at God. Amazing. No, it's not what He does. Instead, He starts with, drum roll please, a genealogy record. Yeah. No, of course not. Yeah. It's the most boring part of the entire Bible. Why would God do that? 400 years of silence and then genealogy record. Why would God do that? Here, I'll read just a bit of it to you. Try not to fall asleep. This is Matthew 1, 1 through 4. This is the genealogy of Jesus the Messiah, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham was the father of Isaac. Isaac, the father of Jacob. Jacob, the father of Judah and his brothers. Judah, the father of Perez and Zerah, whose mother was Tamar.
Perez is the father of Hezron. Hezron is the father of Ram.
Seriously, I gotta stop, like, falling asleep. It's so boring to us. But it's important to understand that genealogy records were super important to the ancient Jews. By the way, my dad did some genealogy research recently and found out that my family, the Ransons, came from pirates.
Arr, matey.
Ranson, ransom, that whole thing, that's actually true. If your last name is Gold or Booty, on behalf of me and my ancestors, I want you to know we're so sorry. And we forgot we buried the treasure, so we're gonna go ahead and keep that. Anyway, good genealogical record keeping has one basic rule. Write the names in order. But right off the bat, this genealogy record, the one about Jesus, completely breaks that rule because it starts with Jesus the Messiah, the son of David. which stands out because it's out of order. David's not first, he's 14th. So why would God list him first? It's because he wanted to be sure that you and I hear something clearly about who Jesus really was. Putting David first is saying that of all the people in the Old Testament of the Bible, which, by the way, is the far bigger section of the Bible, covers thousands of years of history, more than the New Testament, that David is the person whose life most holds clues about Jesus. Now, he wasn't Jesus. He was fallen. He was imperfect. He had problems, all that stuff. But there are purposeful patterns and parallels between them that hold clues to who Jesus really was. Here's a few of those patterns and parallels. Both Jesus and David were born outsiders. They're both born in the same tiny hill country town outside of Jerusalem. It's called Bethlehem. Both of them spent most of their childhood outside. David, literally as a shepherd, outside on the hills, which also meant that he was outside of normal Jewish practice because he couldn't go do the stuff that everybody did because he was outside with the sheep. Jesus was outside, literally born outside in a barn, and then an outsider of society because of the scandal surrounding his birth. But both of these outsiders defeated the enemy that plagued their people on the inside. David defeated Goliath in the fear that had gripped his nation with a slingshot and a rock. And Jesus defeated the enemy of sin with his life. David was called a good shepherd. Jesus is known as the good shepherd. And despite being outsiders, both Jesus and David would become king. And both would decide who could come inside and have a seat at their table. Now, if you want to know who Jesus really was, start the story of David. Just search through it. When it comes to answering our question of the day, who can come close to the king? Who's allowed inside? There's one story from David's life that stands far above all the others. You've likely never heard of it, but I'm willing to bet you've lived this story your entire life. Now, there are two characters in this story. The first is David, obviously. And even if this is the very first episode of anything about God you've ever watched, you still know him from David versus Goliath. He's the OG underdog. He's one of the most popular and beloved people to ever walk the earth. In fact, he's so popular and beloved that 3,000 years after his death, we still name babies after him. Seriously, as of today, David is one of the top 100 names for baby boys born in the US, France, Germany, England, New Zealand, and about a dozen other countries. According to Wikipedia, 1 out of 28 people in America are named after him. I'm just being honest, if 3,000 years from now, there were even like 3 people named Kyle, I would count my life a total win, like home run, right? The second character is literally the exact opposite of David. I promise you've never heard anyone named after him. His name is Mephibosheth. It sounds like you're trying to say a different name, and then you like drank a bowl of soup as you're talking. Mephibosheth. So we're just going to call him Meb for the sake of this rest of this time. Now, he was both the son of David's very best friend, Jonathan, and the grandson of David's very worst enemy, King Saul. It's kind of awkward and unfortunate for him, right? King Saul, Jonathan's father, he was the first ever king in the history of Israel, but he stopped following God. So God made a plan to install David as the next king of Israel. Saul found out about the plan, and he was less than thrilled about it. Why? Well, because first, he wanted to stay king. And second, he wanted Jonathan to take over and be king someday, following his footsteps. So his strategy was to keep David close to him and pretend that everything was cool. Like, no problems, man. But there were signs that it wasn't. Like the one time he hurled spears at people asking where David was so he could kill him. Pro tip, Saul, not subtle. Now, incredibly, Jonathan was actually super okay with David becoming king instead of him. In fact, when Saul's real intentions to assassinate David became clear, it was Jonathan who helped David escape to safety. In return, Jonathan only asked David for one thing. We'll pick up the story in 1 Samuel 20, verse 15. Jonathan says, "Do not ever cut off your kindness from my family, not even when the Lord has cut off every one of David's enemies from the face of the earth." That means, after I'm gone, after my father, your worst enemy, is gone, please show kindness to my family. And David heard that, and of course, he agreed. He loved Jonathan, loved his family. And he swore he would protect his family. He would bring them inside with him. A few years later, King Saul and Jonathan were killed in war. And at that moment, two things happened simultaneously. One, David became king. And two, Mephibosheth became an orphan at 5 years old. Now, my opinion here is that Mephibosheth and his caretaker knew the promise that David had made to his dad, Jonathan. After all, why in the world would Jonathan hide the news from the very person who it protects? I don't think he would have. See, I think he would have told the nurse and little Meb, hey, if anything happens to me, don't worry, just go to David's house, go to the new king, and he'll welcome you in. He'll open the doors, and you'll have a seat at his table. But the caretaker doesn't trust it. She thinks David's gonna do what all conquering kings do back in the day. You kill the old king's family so that no one can ever say they have a legitimate claim on the throne, except for you. So the nurse does what she thinks is right, and she scoops up little Meb, and she runs far, far away. This is what the story says in 2 Samuel 4, verse 4. Jonathan, son of Saul, had a son who was lame in both feet. He was 5 years old when the news about Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel. His nurse picked him up and fled, but as she hurried to leave, he fell and became disabled. His name was Mephibosheth. So she runs. She flees, she trips, breaks little Meb's feet. He's crippled for life. Now, this was a massive, massive deal, particularly way back then. Now, today, thankfully, we know that people with disabilities and physical challenges have equal and immense worth and value to add to our society, our businesses, culture, the kingdom of God, all of that. But back then, even if it rightly offends our modern sensibilities now, back then, that wasn't the case. To be physically disabled was to be disqualified from almost everything in society. It was to live your life as an outsider, away from the inner circle, out in the cold. Now, the nurse carried Meb literally to the outer borders of Israel, up to the rocky, cold hill country to the east of the Sea of Galilee. Now, 7 years go by, David's king, and when little Meb was about 12 years old, David marched on Jerusalem and conquered it. The story reads like this, 2 Samuel 5, 6 to 8. The king, that's David, and his men marched to Jerusalem to attack the Jebusites who lived there. The Jebusites said to David, "You will not get in here. Even the blind and lame can ward you off." Ha ha! Now they thought, David cannot get in here. Nevertheless, David captured the fortress of Zion, which is the city of David. On that day, David had said, "Anyone who conquers the Jebusites will have to use the water shaft to reach those lame and blind who are my enemies." That is why they say the blind and lame will not enter the palace. Right here is the exact moment when the rule gets unofficially written. Who can come close to the king? Not the lame and the blind, not people with problems, only the able-bodied, only the perfect people, only the people with perfect track records, perfect everything are allowed in. Imagine being Mephibosheth in this moment. This is the greatest military win of his generation's entire lifetime. And the word that's spreading through the entire nation, the people are fist bumping each other about, high-fiving each other, is that the blind and the lame will not enter the palace. We win, but not you, Meb, not you. People with disabilities, they don't qualify. You know, the promise King David made, welcome you in. Maybe he made it then, but now, Meb, now the entire nation is confirming the feeling in your gut. King doesn't want you inside. You are an outsider, and you always will be. I wonder, is this how you feel about Jesus? That you lack whatever it would take to be one of his insiders? You don't pray enough. You don't read the Bible enough. You don't have all the feelings that other people around you have. People talk about hearing from God every day. That's never happened to you even once. You feel like an outsider. Maybe it's tied to mistakes you've made and bad habits you still have, you just can't kick. Whatever it is, you just know deep down in your gut that maybe Jesus will let you hang around the outer grounds, but he definitely doesn't want you part of his inner circle. You're not an insider, you're an outsider. If that's how you feel, you are Mephibosheth. People with disabilities just aren't allowed inside, never will be. Now, I found myself feeling this way recently. Over the holidays, I told my wife, Sarah, that I just feel like no matter how much I do, it's never enough. Not just with stuff with God, just life in general right now. At home, I can give my kids all the attention and energy that I have. I can play hours of card games and board games and go outside and throw football and then come inside and read book after book after mind-numbing freaking book. And then after all of that, when I'm completely exhausted. They ask me for one more thing every time that I don't have to give. And it just makes me feel like I'm not enough. I can't do it. I'm not a good dad, I'm an imposter. I'm an outsider. At work, I can build teams, I can hire and train good people, I can try to make the very best decisions, I can even see great work happen, and yet it never feels like it's enough. Never enough people saw it. Not enough people took a next step. Not enough people signed up for that thing that we had hoped for. We could have filled more food boxes. We could have raised more money for debt relief. We could have got more people connected to small groups. I just feel like at the end of the day, every single time, I don't have what it takes. I never will. I'm left feeling like I'm on the outside. Now, on top of that, is all the stuff that I'm supposed to be doing to be a good Christian, to remain in God's good graces. You ever heard that phrase? What's it take to remain in God's good graces? I was talking to a friend about this recently. He told me that he made a list once of all the things he had learned at church that he was supposed to do. So I thought about that. I was like, man, yeah, what will my list be? And here's a partial list of them. I am, as a Christian, supposed to die to my wife, lead my kids, honor my boss, and also all authorities, pray without ceasing, tithe, volunteer regularly, attend service every week, or if I can't, watch every week, be honest in everything, even when it's hard, love my neighbor, also my enemies, fight for the justice for those who are in prison and oppressed, care for the orphans, the poor, don't forget widows, work as if I'm working for the Lord, do everything with excellence, financially be a good steward and produce a great return for the resources God has entrusted me with. Honor my parents, have a vibrant community, take care of my body. It's God's temple, after all. Grow in spiritual gifts. Have I spoken in tongues yet recently? Should I? Is that weird? I should probably fast more, intercede for the nations, fulfill the Great Commission, evangelize and share the gospel with my neighbors, become a mentor, make disciples, preferably, again, of all the nations. And I can go on and on and on and on. Is that how God feels to you? Like a laundry list of things that just confirm you'll never measure up. You're destined to stay on the outside. You'll never be good enough to be part of the inner circle. Just proof that you're not enough. You want to know the truth? Truth is, you are right. You are not enough, and neither am I. In fact, no one is enough. We are not able, which means something. We are all disabled, just like Mephibosheth. The good news? The story does not end out here.
I can't catch my breath, it's really you. I've been waiting so long, oh, you're finally home, love. I can't catch my breath, it's really you. I've been waiting so long, oh, you're finally home, love. Right where you
After word spreads that the blind and the lame can't enter the palace, years go by, a decade, maybe even more, and then suddenly David remembers. He says, oh, my promise to Jonathan. And so he asks around, is there anybody left of that family who I can show kindness to? And his servants go out and they find an old servant of that family named Ziba, who comes to David and tells him this in 2 Samuel 9:3. He says, there is still a son of Jonathan. He is lame in both feet. In other words, Ziba says, it's not even worth me telling you his name. There is this guy, but he's lame. He's the kind of guy who can't come into the palace, David, so you're not interested. But David, the king, says, no, go get him and bring him to me anyway. And so they do, and they bring Mephibosheth in to see David. And this is the recording of their first interaction in 2 Samuel 9, verse 6 through 13. Don't be afraid, David said to him, for I will surely show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan. I will restore to you all the land that belonged to your grandfather Saul, and you will always eat at my table. Mephibosheth bowed down and said, What is your servant that you should notice a dead dog like me? He can't believe it. He's like, me? I didn't even think I was allowed inside. It goes on. And the king summoned Ziba, Saul's steward, and said to him, Mephibosheth, grandson of your master, will always eat at my table. So Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. And Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem because he always ate at the king's table. He was lame in both feet. Did you catch the repetition? Listen, you know something is a big deal in ancient Jewish literature, which is what the Bible is, if it's repeated three times. But there was a phrase in that story that was repeated four times. It was the phrase, you will always eat at the king's table. Why all the emphasis? It's to make this point. Mephibosheth wasn't just invited inside the king's house. He wasn't just invited inside the palace to come in from the cold, but go live in the guest quarters. He was invited to become an insider of insiders at King David's table. That's why he says to him, you will always eat at the king's table. I'm loaded with stress, I'm at a loss. Ask me how I feel. Adjectives miss me, God, I miss my mom. Wanna double back, can I get a one up? Wasn't ready for the boss level, maybe snug up. Nothing heavy, but the cost is deep. Undulating to the base of the heap. I'm drunk, I'm drunk, cause it's just a theme. It would lead to the callous life of chipping icing. A chalice might get a hint of light on the ropes of the ring where the darkness binds. Where's my mind? Where is my mind? Waist deep swimming in a pool of blind. Feet on the air and my head on the ground freezing. I need ya. Remember the first name recorded for Jesus in the entire New Testament after 400 years of silence from God. Son of that king, son of David, who says, don't just come inside my door. Don't just come inside my house. Come sit at my table. The good news for you and for me is that Jesus, the Son of David, is the King who exclusively invites one type of person to sit at his table. Outsiders like you and me.
That place at the table, that sense of belonging and a home compels us into action. It compels us into worship, into gratitude, and even giving. One of the ways we do that is by giving, and you can go to crossroads.net/give to learn more. And another way we show our gratitude is by worshiping through song, and we're gonna do that right now.
Thank you.
I'm so glad that you were with us today. I learned a lot, and I'm glad that you were here. Please join us next week. We're going to have our Super Bowl of preaching.
Yeah, we are. Come on. And I'm in it. I need your help.
Okay.
I got to get some reps in for the big game next week. So if we can just go, I need your help really quick. Some drills.
Right now.
I've been doing 3-cone, 4-cone. I've maxed up to like 26 cones.
26 cones.
We're just going to go do some drills real quick.
Okay,
let's go.
Following you.
Okay, we're doing some basic drills. First, you gotta get ready. You want some tape?
No, I don't even have the right like clothes or shoes.
Don't worry about
the tape.
This is not
obsolete.
Listen, this isn't about you winning. It's about me. It's about what I meant to say. It's about us having fun.
Oh, okay, got it.
Together. This is Josh. He's my personal confidence coach.
Okay.
Slash here to make sure that.
Do I have one of those or no?
You don't need one of those. It's totally fine. Okay, so this one is going to be throwing footballs through the thing. Just aim right for the middle.
Okay, aim for the middle.
Just zip the middle. Yeah, now what you want to do, it's kind of more off your weight and your back heel.
Is it?
And then you kind of drive forward. Yeah, watch like this.
Okay.
See? Just like that. And it just goes in. Second part of football. It's called defense. All you got to do is tackle stuff. You're going to tackle the tackle dummy, which I don't mean to be insulting to You're gonna wanna get kind of in a, like a.
Is this gonna mess up my shoes, man?
You're just gonna get down real low. I want a 3-point stance, kind of like this. I'm gonna say Omaha, because Peyton Manning says Omaha. So when I say Omaha, I want you to hit the tackle dummy. Ready, set, Omaha!
Oh, come on, I'm like giving it everything I got there. You didn't even move.
No, it's my fault. I didn't demonstrate. Let me demonstrate.
Okay, demonstrate.
It's really, okay, ready? Ready?
All right, Omaha. Didn't even like touch him, man.
I didn't have to. The good news here is I got what I needed, which is more confidence. I feel better after having done this next to you.
You feel ready for the Super Bowl.
I feel totally ready for the Super Bowl of, what was it?
It's preaching.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, anyways, we'll see you guys next time for the Super Bowl of preaching right back right here.
Oh, not football.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who says you can't have a sense of spirituality during this? Well, that's why we created an online experience to give you God during the big game. My name is Brian.
And I'm Chuck.
Yeah, we just noticed that people were tuning out of churches during Sunday weekend. And we said, no, let's actually have a preach-off where I get to smack you down in front of a live massive audience.
Well, to be clear, if you've never seen it before, he's not a white man that's actually going to hit a black man that day. Just to clarify that. But we do have a preach-off competition, so we are going to do that.
I am still the man. I am still the man. And the man is going to put you down.
That's right. It literally is. It's unlike anything you're going to see on a church, in a church. And it's a lot of fun. It really is. Original commercials. I mean, we're having fun as we do this, but it's very much about getting God to you and having a little fun while we do it. So this thing grew out of an idea. We've been doing it now for years and years. But for the first time, we get to do it in a unique way that connects to you right where you are.
Legitimate preaching, legitimate Bible, legitimate in your face, gonna make a difference in your life while somebody else gets a beat down. That's what's gonna happen.
What is it with you and beat down? You really like beat down.
I do like beat down. I like winning. If
that's
it's
fair.
Worth playing,
that's
it's
fair.
Worth winning,
that's fair.
I am going to win.
That's fair. I know what somebody told me.
What?
It's about mind over matter. If you don't mind, it don't matter.
You know what else someone else told me?
What somebody told you?
Jesus loves you. That's what someone else told me.
Last year, you were quicker on that line.
I was pretty good
about my chances to win. We want you to be a part of this. It's going to be an amazing opportunity for you to connect, see a competition, and actually grow closer to God.
Absolutely. We'll see you then.